I see your finger
pointing. Yeah, well,
gently into space.
No, I want to make sure that everybody had their turn doing it.
Everybody, like who? Was there somebody in particular?
Yes.
You were pointing.
Yes.
Who could that be?
Well,
maybe
yes.
We'll just ask for a volunteer. Is there a volunteer for reading this?
I guess that will be my turn.
Oh, would you vote? That's very kind. Thank you. You got 2 months. Do you have any questions, answers, comments, or complaints tonight? Anything you want? Yes, sir.
You said last night at the beginning about that awakening isn't something that you're trying to get. It's a factor of awareness.
It's
of
what
something
you're trying
that
to
already
become
exists.
Aware of. Yeah, it already exists.
I wonder if you could expand on that in terms of awareness.
In terms of awareness?
Well, as I understood what you said last night, that it's developing your awareness by calming the mind that allows you to...
Calming the mind and developing the awareness are the two necessary steps. You need to do both of them. They're not the same thing. But what was your question, if I have your question better? Then I might actually talk somewhere in the neighborhood of it, which would be useful.
Well, you said it wasn't something that you can attain in terms of something that you can get.
Get that isn't already present.
Yeah.
It's not something that isn't already present. State of awakening. That's exactly true. And what it is, however, is something that you uncover that you have not seen. It is covered. The state of enlightenment or the state of awakening is covered. And what is it covered by, you all ask, right? Oh, Cecily. Oh, wise one from southern Alberta. Central Alberta. Central. Yeah, small town.
Yeah.
Less smog. Easier to think. What is it covered by, right? Isn't that what you want to know?
Yes.
Covered by two things. There are two veils. And they are? Primitive views and conflicting emotional states. Right. They're called... The two veils, or they're called the two obscurations. If you look at any school of Buddhism, you will find them referred to, even Zen, where they don't refer to much at all. Refer to them. Huh?
It's not a joke.
Not a joke. And, there are also indicated when you read about the two accumulations or the two heaps. Do you know what the two accumulations are or the two heaps?
Merit
and wisdom. Which are the two heaps you have to accumulate before you can get it, right? What the two heaps are the opposite of the two veils. Well, primitive view.
Primitive
view. That's how it has been translated by the Polytech Society and by the first translators from Tibetan Buddhism. I'm sure that there are much more erudite or sophisticated translations, and it would be wise for you to go with them. I am such a creature of habit that I tend to use, you know, what I first learned as the translation. But primitive view is, I think, in some ways a very suitable. You could also call it partial view. are any view that is bounded by the experience of just being in your own body, you know, just from being in your own body and looking a certain way, and you think, oh, they and I. Any view where it's a relationship to I rather than a view of totality. Humph. So when that is clarified, when that is no longer obscuring reality, individual view is no longer, you could call it individual view too, based on the causes and conditions that create the I of the moment, the view. Because, you know, in one mood you'll think one thing, in another mood you'll think the other. Anybody in this room never experienced that? Are there any liars present this evening? You know that views change very much in many circumstances, not only with age, not only that, you know, when you were three, you may have believed in Santa Claus, and when you were 13, you wished you did. Not only that kind of view, but many, many views change in a day. Why do they change? Why do they change?
Well, sometimes it could be a different emotional state.
And certainly, different views do have different emotional states attached to them generally, don't they? And what changes the emotional states? According to the Buddha, you see, view and emotion, conflictive emotion and primitive view are linked. If you've got one, you're going to have the other. If you've got one, you're going to have the other.
Desire.
That's kind of yes but no, or a no but yes answer. So, you know, like, yeah, but I mean, there can be desire without object.
Oh, awareness.
You know?
Oh, I see. So grasping.
Grasping. Okay. Oh. Conditioned states and belief in a permanent self. Grasping at a permanent self. Sorry, Otto?
Well, being aware of a emotional state will change a moment.
Absolutely. Being aware changes everything. Being aware, when you're practicing awareness, you're not practicing your answer, you're practicing a question. Which is one of the reasons why awareness changes everything. You don't have to get the right answer, you just have to stop getting answers. Does that make sense to you? So awareness is powerful. Because when you're actually practicing awareness, you don't have view. You have awareness. When you're actually practicing it. So, but let's just back up a little bit before we go there. So you have these two things, primitive view and conflictive emotional state. In a way, desire, but not so much desire as desire with ignorance. Ignoring this because that's going to get it. Becoming. Something is dissatisfactory here, so therefore, so, merit is developed how?
Through offerings to the Buddhas and offerings to sentient beings.
And what does that mean? Do you have to believe that the Buddha is actually receiving the offerings, or that you're actually making the offerings to the Buddha for it to develop merit?
Perhaps it's offerings of a pure awareness or pure mind consciousness.
I think it's probably just letting go, just generosity. If you look at merit, it's always developed through generosity, somehow or other. Always developed through letting go, letting go. Letting the energy flow outwardly, altruism. And wisdom is, so merit is the action of generosity. The flow of energy. And wisdom is what? I can't hear you.
Emptiness.
Knowing that there is no inherent position or possession or entity or identity. No inherent fixed identity or position. So both of those things are pointing to letting go of thingness. And partial view does not let go of thingness, does it? Does it? And conflictive emotions does not let go of thingness, does it? Do you have emotional patterns that repeat?
Yes. Yes, yes.
Sorry. Oh, pushy. Blemish.
Wow. So yeah, if you really like. Yeah, if you perfect the generosity, you're letting go of this, like, the flow then takes you to the...
It can. It will loosen it, but then you can get into the pride of being generous, too, you know? But it will loosen the habitual, I don't have anything to give, or you should give to me, you know, to make yourself powerful enough to be magnanimous, is a wonderful thing to do. And it changes your energy. But then what you have to do is not fixate on that as a fixed state either. So those are the two veils, and when they are removed, then the two heaps are easily accumulated, or the two accumulations are easily completed. You've all read that in Tibetan Buddhism, the two heaps accumulating, the two accumulations or the two heaps. You've seen that? Yeah. They're directly related to the two veils. So what is it that those accumulations, what is it that you're accumulating? You're accumulating the ability to let go of clinging, to let go of identities, to perceive things as they are in a state of flux, inner and outer.
When they talk about accumulating merit or accumulating wisdom, is it you're developing the pattern so that becomes more your habitual pattern?
You're creating that as your conditioned state.
Okay.
because the original mind is pure, and then it is covered by these two veils, conflictive emotion and primitive view. How is it covered? Mostly by well, not mostly, all of the entire phenomenal world, according to the Buddhist traditions, arises with three things: craving, false view, and conceit. Craving, false view, and conceit. Craving is when there is, how to put this, you know, generally speaking, when you do a Tibetan sadhana, you start with out of emptiness arises.
Yes. Yeah.
Or the statement of emptiness. So the state of emptiness continuously happens in between your other hiccups of great activity. There are these little pauses of emptiness, of just letting go. Then there is this sort of sense of dissatisfactoriness. It's called ignorance because it is based on an ignoring. It's based on a ripple of energy, seeds of karma ripening, of what is that? Mango. Craving. Something other than what is present. Craving. False view. That will satisfy. Conceit.
Me.
Craving, false view, and conceit. Those three things arise. So those three things are totally linked together. Craving, false view, and conceit. And if you look at the Paticca Samuppada, the dependent origination, law of dependent origination, basically it starts with that, dependent on ignorance, avijja, sankhara, right? Formations. Formations is that craving. Formation, and again, you've got that book now, right? This, Other Lives, Other Selves. That's the book that I think gives the clearest explanation of what formations are. Not necessarily because that's what he's setting out to write, and you may not even like the first three or four chapters, but I suggest that if you persevere with that book, you find it very useful. I suggest if you actually read that book, you'll find it very useful. Because if you read it, you will understand, I think, what is meant by sankhara. And you'll glean that a little bit when you read it, but then there is a certain point about halfway through it where it just suddenly swells and you go, ah. And if you don't have a grasp of sankhara, you're not going to understand what the Buddha was talking about. Because sankhara is an important thing to perceive. It's important to understand sankhara. It weakens the sense of clinging to identity. Yeah?
I know you covered it the other day. Could you define sankhara again?
It's usually translated as mental perceptions. Or formations, mental formationings. And there is not a good definition of it, a good translation of it in English, because I don't think we have a word for it in English, nor do we have a word for this concept. It's close to what Jung called archetype, but it's not that. It's seeds of karma looking for a place to happen. And the best description I can give of it is when I was in Israel and we were trying to sink each other in the Dead Sea. Does it sound familiar? Which was fun to do because we got to burn each other's eyeballs. Because you would splash around like mad and then you'd find out exactly how salty the Dead Sea really is. And then we, you know, sort of quit doing that, tormenting each other for a while, and I'm standing there, and the light is extremely, extremely bright. Really, really bright light, you know, in Israel, in the desert. And the beams of light are just going into the water, and you can actually see into the water, almost like it's lit up by a very strong spotlight. And you could see the super dense, what would you call that, solution?
Saturation.
Super saturated. But you could see these crystals almost forming in liquid state. All these different salts and things, they almost start to form into a crystal. And then a wave would come, and so they'd like go apart again. And then another crystal would almost form and go apart. And it's like that. Sankhara are all those propensities, conscious propensities. So they're half an emotional energy, half an image, sort of half-half, sort of, that are looking, if the right circumstances arise, they will ripen into an action. And in the Tibetan tradition, that's a Mogadishu, and it's usually the root chakra. It has to do with air and desire. You know, in the beginning was the word, you know. A Mogadishu's consort, air, is usually called Samayatara. Isn't that beautiful? The one who keeps their word. So, you know, Sankara is almost all these words looking for a place to be spoken, a word that's going to be bring something forth out of energy. If the conditions are right, it will happen. That form will arise. Sometime or other, the conditions are right for any form to arise. Which ones will arise? Depends on your focus. So if you're focusing on, for example, altruism, then when seeds for non-altruistic activities arise, you'll see them, you'll feel the urge of them, but they won't have the condition to ripen because you're focusing on something else. That's very long-winded, but maybe that gives you some idea. So it's called propensities or mental formations or, you know, formation before its form. The oomph to form before there is an actual form. There isn't a word in English, and I don't think you can really understand the Buddha's teaching unless you understand what sankhara is. Because you will get so caught up in whether or not you believe in other lifetimes or reincarnation or blah, 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 well, I believe this, and never be able to examine the patterns of consciousness and how they rise and fall. So I strongly recommend reading about livers. Right? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Chapter 8.
Yeah.
So the pain in the woman's neck that eventually came back to her, the man's neck, to hanging himself because of the devastation of his family that came back into that pain in the neck is a form of sankhara.
Yeah.
In that individual in that moment in time and that circumstance.
Yeah. Sankhara are the propensities. Their ripening is form. Sankhara are the propensities. Their ripening is form.
Form, and the form is a pain in the neck and not a
turn. Yeah, and the consciousness that reflects them as a reality is called vijnana. Perceiving of them is what creates the how one is going to react. Right? If you perceive them as personal, right? And you're feeling about it, and you see those are all interwoven. So the five aggregates are very important to understand. They're the five Dhyani Buddhas. They're the five consorts. They're linked to the five consorts. And if you don't have a grasp of that, you're only working with half the picture. So you will be able to do wonderful meditative states, but you won't be free to use them with power. You won't have the skill to work with them. You can go off and meditate by yourself somewhere, or, you know, have your special little teacher, whoever it may be, doesn't matter who it is, and do my meditation and have some wonderful good times. But in terms of compassion or awakening, you're not doing anything. You're only covering half the story. You're exploring the range of consciousness within I. You're a hearer, maybe a Pratyeka Buddha, but I doubt it. But definitely a Shravaka, a hearer. But if you're actually interested in, gee, this emotional pattern of feeling like I'm always fighting against something keeps coming up in my life, or I keep having these rotten relationships, you know, or if you notice that you only really have good relationships with somebody who treats you badly, or that you treat badly, or you only have jobs where you're underpaid and overworked. Do you understand? And it consistently happens, let's say more than twice, you might question whether we want to know more about Sankara. You might question whether you want to know that. And you might question that because that will help you understand how to clear the two veils. Because something is occurring and it's obscured to you. You can't see it because you're not looking at it properly. So you need to look at it properly. First, you need to remove the sense that it's I. It's not I. It's not even you. You're good, but you're not that good. It's not I, and it's not you. What is there then? What does that leave?
Sankara.
Energy. Energy dancing. Cause and effect, looking for a place to happen. What affects how it happens? Certainly perception. So you have the Pure Land schools, where they say, see everything as Amitabha Buddha. You bet your sweet bippy, it works. You know, I know a lot of people have, because they're, Theravadins, or they're Vajrayana, or they're this, or they're that, they tend to sort of look down at, well, they're just Pure Land. But you should understand what Pure Land is based on. Based on that perception is a choice. Now that's pretty brave, isn't it? Deciding, talk about Haruka stance. Naked, you know? Let go of all your defenses and just walk into the world and say everything is a manifestation of Amitabha Buddha. and really discipline yourself to act that way. Wouldn't that be interesting, folks? Probably, you know, all insurance salespersons, all lawyers, they'd all be out of work. All warranty writers, you know? Because no matter what manifests would be Amitabha Buddha. And don't you think that's a little closer to reality? From a Buddhist point of view. Sorry?
Pretty shiny.
Yeah. Or maybe it's too shiny. Maybe what we need is a whole belief system other than that, you know. The right way to meditate, or what really is refuge, or what is, you know. Maybe we need more rules, then we know we're doing a real practice, you know. Okay. But it doesn't matter. See, none of that matters. It doesn't matter what you need, because whatever it is, you can have it. You need to be convinced. You need like 20 years of being convinced. That's okay. You can have that. You need to go straight for it faster than anybody else in the entire universe. Fine, let me step aside. But what it is that you're trying for has always been, will always be. And so, in order to describe it, you talk about it as the unborn, undying. When you're getting close to it, the support for it, its seat, when you get...
Everybody missed that part. I have knowledge of...
supernormal powers. So what would supernormal powers be?
Clairvoyance. Awareness of their possibility. Like true awareness.
Knowledge of what is behind the illusory nature of existence. Yeah. And the next thing, there are eight of them. Do you want to hear all eight? You know the eight animals that hold up the thrones in the different deities? So saying there's not a deity here sitting on a throne. Any over there? Oh yes, on Vajradhara there. He has got lions. See, there's eight lions. On the blue one there? It's usually two on each corner. You know, one, two, three, four, five. And they represent the eight supernormal powers. Because that's what supports, that is the foundation, that is the base on which the platform of Buddha nature arises. So the first one is knowledge of supernormal powers. Second one is what they call a divine ear. Third one is called penetration of minds.
So what does that mean?
Let's just go through them all and then we'll go back to them. And is that, that's okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Penetration of minds. Fourth one is knowledge of past lives. Fifth one is knowledge of passing away and reappearing. Sixth one is knowledge of the destruction of cankers. Cankers are craving, false view, and conceit. Those are the cankers. The destruction of those. Destruction of those would be when they become their opposite, which is clarity, emptiness, and non-dual. That's what the Dharmakara is. It's a representation of mind. Mind is craving, false view, and conceit, or clarity, emptiness, and non-dual. And, oh, the last two are insight. Knowledge, and the last one, knowledge of the mind-made body.
Is that a hyphenated mind-made, or is it mind?
Yeah.
There's two ways that you have that.
There is. Thank you. Yeah, it's hyphenated. A. So you get them, you know, seated on an elephant. If those eight are being operating through the Virochana family, a lion. If it's through the, it's a lion throne. If it's through Akshobhya family, in peacock. You get the idea. So now.
When you say knowledge, are you saying that same thing as direct experience?
Yeah, direct experience. Direct experience.
Not
that
reading
that
about.
Yeah, direct experience that you cannot question. It's called, there are two things. One's called knowledge and the other's called understanding. Direct experience is knowledge. Understanding is when that you not only have knowledge, but you can see the causes and conditions for that knowledge. So this isn't understanding, this is just knowledge, that you clearly understand what would be called supernormal powers. That is to say, you do not believe in objects anymore, you believe in energy. So it isn't a question of whether or not prayer works. Or... you know, whether rain might happen here, but not two blocks away. Or, you know, some of you, many of you know teachers who are really skilled with working with the elements. Some people, you even know teachers who have a marvelous sense of humor about how they work with the elements. I happen to know a teacher who's like that. And, that would be knowledge, do you understand, of supernormal powers. It's not supernormal from the point of view of someone who sees energy, same here as out there. You know? And when I'm using my material body, I don't have any problem opening a door usually. And so when you use the energy body, if you have knowledge of that, but that means you have to let go of a sense of a separate self, a fixed separate self. Well, that's not so easy, is it? Because we're so caught by our primitive views and our fixed emotional states, our primitive view about I am separate from you, for whatever reasons. They're all pretty well summed up in the eight worldly dharmas. Aren't they? So you can see why that sutra we read last night is so applicable to this. Because if you don't want to see when a blemish is occurring. That means you're clinging to a separate self. Doesn't it? Does that make sense to you? Should, I hope it does. And when you do allow, when you are more interested in seeing things as they are, than trying to make real that which is unreal, then it's a very short step to being able to have knowledge of supernormal powers. So you wanted to ask what?
Yeah, I think it was the third one, mind penetrating.
Penetration of minds.
Yeah, what is that?
Quite often in the sutras, you have the Buddha, somebody meditating somewhere, and the Buddha perceiving that that person is such and such, and appearing to that person.
Okay.
We could call it telepathy, or where you don't need the body to appear in order to believe that there's a conversation going on. Mm-hmm. Is that interesting to you? Mm-hmm. Would you tell me if it wasn't? Yes.
Hey, I'm just remembering something you said last night, which ties in, I think, to everything, is when the shift from your confidence comes from a place of what is rather than the need to be loved or...
That's right.
Have you ever been loved?
So, you see, what I was saying earlier, it doesn't really, in a way, it doesn't matter whether you're Pure Land or you're... I'm just going to jump right into enlightenment right now. It doesn't really matter what your path is. Mm-hmm. Only that you honor it. That's all that matters. Mm-hmm. Only that you don't quibble. You know, get on with it. Perform it. And do it with some passion. And that in itself will clarify your path. I recently asked a friend of mine to not take anything back, because my friend has a habit of buying things and then taking them back and then going back and getting them again and taking ideas, purchases, dates, commitments, you know, back, forth, back. This person is in agony at the moment. Say they bought a fairly expensive piece of equipment. And of course, they made this promise to me over something small, like some chewing gum or something. So I was talking to them about this piece of equipment, and I was saying, of course, you're going to honor your promise. And there was this long silence. And of course, I'm going, because sometimes the only way we're really going to find out what our path really is if it's expensive, isn't it? If we're really going to lose something, and we really have to pay attention, and we really have to say, like you, you know, what do I want? You know? Not, well, I could do this or this, but what? And then you have to remember that, don't you? Because the sankharas, the little seeds, you know, that you have, you know, kind of bought into those seeds and made a little bed for them, so they have propagated even more seeds in this lifetime. They will keep trying to come up. You know, you actually have to work at maintaining real insights. You have to make sure that you work at maintaining them. Not, well, I had the experience once, that should, you know. Oh yes, I had that insight, and see, I'll just look on my day timer. And if there isn't a lot of clinging and grasping to a permanent self, it's not a problem that you have to work at these things, because every time is the first time anyway. You've never been here before. So it's only an issue if there is a position you're trying to get to. So already you know, according to the language of last night, blemish, blemish. Right? So you just say that, oh, blemish, blemish. Let it pass. Maybe it isn't necessary for everyone to have a strong definition of themselves. Maybe for some people it is necessary that they have to have a definition of who they are before they can let go of it. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's very important. Maybe for many people what they need to do is look at the definition they've been holding over their heads like an axe and say, well, does this really fit what my passion is? Maybe my passion is to be mediocre. You know? And maybe you have some idea that your passion means you have to be other than mediocre. Maybe your idea is blocking your path. Mediocre is not mediocre. It's power. The mean, the medium, those who move from day to day are the power of consciousness. We all need to be mediocre quite regularly because that gives us power, the power of ethics. The flashes should be a little less frequent, because they're addictive, number one. And number two, you lose your perspective. That's my view. You don't see the value of just sitting there and examining a blade of grass if you have to be brilliant all the time. Does that make sense? You have so many things that you have to accomplish. Does this make sense? So there are people who need to do that because they're caught in such a sense of inferiority that it's very necessary for them to be, you know, named as Times Woman of the Year or whatever. For the men, and men have to learn, you know, women have to be named Men of the Year, and then. And then that's, you know, finally I've actually accomplished the impossible. But then it is in the ordinary, in the mediocre, that there is enough calm, enough non-stardom to really be present. To really consider, you know, is this a real thing? what is this? How is it its taste? Is it, you know? And it's very hard to sit down and analyze taste, be present with, in some kind of interested way, a glass of water, if you can't be mediocre. Isn't that true? Because you're going to be looking for the exceptional thing to do. And don't we all drink water? That's not exceptional. So Buddha studied with all the great teachers of his time. He did all the jhana meditations, he did all the different psychic power development meditations, all those things. If you read about his life, you find out that he did that. And, you know, he was quite a star in the meditation field of the time. But it wasn't satisfactory. So it's not who the great teacher is or what the thing is. It's like to have the moment to look inside yourself and say, where is it? What is it? What he found was by sitting still and looking in his own being. And what he said about it was, I have rediscovered the way to the ancient city, which has been lost. I have opened the gateways. That is to say, he found within himself what it was that is called enlightenment. And that it was there for all beings. And he taught the Dharma, which is the path to enlightenment. And one of the most important things about the path is ehipassiko, to see for oneself. The refuge tree arises out of self-seeing wisdom. Self-see, to be seen for oneself. So where are you going to get this? If you're a star, you're going to get a lot of things, including a star on the door and lots of headaches. Then there's all that press. And the rushing around, and whether somebody is more stardom than you are, whether somebody is less, and who's your warm-up team, and, you know, your support system, and so forth, right? Is that true? You've all been star in some way or other, haven't you? It's really hard to get good staff if you're a star, you know? But if it's to be seen for yourself, and that's fine. Do that and find it's dissatisfactory. Whatever it is that is your path that you think you have to do, do it. But keep bringing awareness back to the center point, to your own being. And say, who is here? What is this? Other than desire or grasping at the outer, what is this? When does one feel the best? When one is practicing altruism. When does one feel the worst? When one is practicing conceit and grasping. It's true?
Yes.
That's my experience anyway. When you're going to practice altruism, how much publicity do you need? Huh? maybe Jay Leno isn't necessary. Is that his name, Leno? Yeah. A certain amount of beauty is useful to make it easier to open your senses. Because dislike causes a closing down of the senses. Like opens them more. Certain amount of beauty, not to the point of lust, balanced. All of these circumstances, like to actually care, understanding that the state of awakening is not separate, is closer than hands and feet, is present in every moment, that the two veils create the conditions so that it's not recognized, that the aspiration to recognize it is the most important thing that you can do. Make the aspiration to recognize it, because we do get what we ask for. Make it repeatedly. Because if you are following what you really want, you are going to get it. Because cause and effect is trustworthy, repeatedly make the aspiration to be able to see through the two veils, or to complete the two accumulations, whatever, whether the glass is half full or half empty, it doesn't matter which one you do. Make that aspiration. Try not to get too busy trying to rush around and get it out there in the world, or get it right in the world, or get every jot and tittle of it down, you know? Relax a little more. Focus on your aspiration and keep enough balance in your environment so that you got a nice place to be mediocre. Take the heat off and watch it flower. That's what meditation is, isn't it? It's pretty mediocre, isn't it? I mean, come on, let's be honest. A lot of meditation is very mediocre, isn't it? It's just being there, isn't it? And that process, moment by moment, drop by drop, of just being present, becomes extraordinary. So, you know, let this be the first talk I've ever given where I'm telling, insisting that you all become mediocre. The middle way. North American School of Mediocrity. Do you have any questions, answers, comments, complaints?
Yeah, I do.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, I do. Okay, I apologize to anyone who doesn't understand this.
It doesn't understand what?
That there's some permits.
That
maybe I should stop.
That what?
Example. I'll just get cut quick.
Okay.
Okay, I have some blemishes. It's important that I realize I have blemishes, eh? Otherwise the seeds will grow and whatnot. I have to understand.
Yeah, it's, and also because you want to make sure that the seeds that aren't blemished are recognized. So that you understand the states that are not, do not have blemishes. Don't just focus on the blemishes. Barry, you notice how in that sutra, at the beginning, it also very clearly delineated knowing when there are not blemishes.
Yes.
So that's equally important.
Yes. Okay.
I don't want to interrupt you again.
No,
go ahead.
Okay, I used to have lots of blemishes. I'm working on a pardon. It's a long, drawn-out, expensive affair.
Mm-hmm, it is.
And I've been places and I've met people I thought were professionals, I thought were Buddhists, know about my past, and I've identified my past. So skip that, that's another story. The thing is, I paid for my prints, $30. I paid for my criminal record check, $30. I waited, got them down. Now I've got to go pay $30 for court documents, and then I've got to pay $50 plus to send all this stuff to the RCMP to get my pardon. The other thing that is altruism, I work at Streetworks, Needle Exchange, and Hooker's and Conrad. I can volunteer there. I applied to volunteer at the Mennonite Center for New Canadians to teach ESL. I've done it before twice. Right on top of the application, criminal record check. I've gone to John Howard's site to teach someone how to read and write. Right on top of the application, criminal record check. So there's lots of places I can't volunteer, and as a Buddhist, I need to volunteer. For myself to survive, I need to volunteer.
I understand that.
So, I guess, here I'm saying all this, what I'm asking is for someone here to say, Barry, hang in there, have courage, do what you have to do. You know, I guess. You know, because I'd like to sit and smoke dope all summer and take out hookers.
Would you?
Well, pardon my...
Would you, Barry?
My whatever you want to call it, my fear would like to be the hedonist. I've done that in the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, so if you did it in the past and you're not doing it now, why aren't you doing it now?
Because I know this causes more suffering.
So you wouldn't like to do that?
No. I mean, there's a part of me...
Then, that was for dramatic purposes, you were saying you would like to do that.
There's a part of me that would like to say, just give up.
Yeah, but there is a part of everyone in this room that would like to do that. Did you know that?
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm sure.
You do know that? What's it called in Buddhism?
Sankhara?
No. There are three types of desire in Buddhism. One is a desire for extinction. One is the desire for a sensual experience other than that which is present. I just want to distract myself. And one of them is a desire for becoming, for just keep reaching. Those three desires are continuously turning around each other. Everybody is having the same experience you're having. Darling, I hope you do. Because if you really know that, you will feel the support. If you really know that, you know that you're walking for me, I'm walking for you. We are making our choices because the opposite choice is not bearable. I'm not making my choices because I want what I'm getting. Most of the choices I make in my life are because I don't want what I was getting. We do learn from cause and effect. And the greatest support we have is knowing that I choose to do this. And therefore, I can understand somebody else learning their choices. Am I making sense to you?
Yeah, sorry, I just spaced out for a minute there. I guess what I'm saying, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a clean and sober, law-abiding person. I care about people, I like to volunteer. I've been called, he's a criminal, and he's a drunk, and he's a drug addict, and he's a brain damage, and he's nothing.
I've been called a woman.
That's
not.